The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
I'm very happy to be here tonight, and I want to thank Gil. I know he's in retreat right now, but thank Gil very much for inviting me. Gil and I practice together at Tassajara, and we're on the Elders Council at San Francisco Zen Center, so we've known each other a long time. And thank you for the introduction and for the help that I received in directions to get here. And I also heard that you had some major renovations, some wonderful renovations, and not knowing the building very well, I'm not sure what actually was done, but it's a really, really beautiful space to sit. And you're very, very lucky to have this place right so convenient. And that wonderful train whistle that you get to hear. Yeah. So please practice here in good health and take good care of yourselves and your teachers. Today, many of you probably know, today is the autumn equinox, which is the evening out of the light, the balance for just a moment, you know, of light and dark. And now we turn towards the darkening of the year. And for the plant life, this is a time of turning inward, and the energy goes down into the roots, and at least in the northern hemisphere, further from the equator. And lots of energy goes down into the ground, into the roots. And this is a wonderful time to practice turning inward, turning into ourselves, into our own roots of practice. And traditionally, this is a time of retreat and self-reflection, and in other many religions. So this morning at Green Gulch, we had our autumnal equinox ceremony that we have every year. We celebrate and mark the solstices and the equinox, vernal and the autumnal equinox. And we gather. Do many of you know Green Gulch Farm? Have any of you been out there? So if you picture the Zendo deck that overlooks the pond, we create a wonderful equinox altar there, which had big baskets of harvested vegetables and fruit, and autumn leaves were spread all out around it, which I got to walk on and kind of crunch around in. And we do a service, and then the chant that we did was called the Harmony of Difference and Equality. And within that particular poem, it's a poem from a Zen master, it talks about light and dark being relative to one another, like forward and backward steps, like the 2 feet in walking, light and dark, which I'll bring up in a moment. And after that chanting, we have a chance, anyone who wants to, can offer words of the season. So we had Ode to Autumn by Keats and made-up poems, some haiku. And I wanted to offer a poem of the season from the Zen master Dogen Zenji, who was a very prolific writer and teacher and poet. This is close to the time of his death. I think he was sick, actually. Just when my longing to see the moon over Kyoto one last time grows deepest, the image I behold this autumn night leaves me sleepless for its beauty. So the autumn moon, because of the the angle and all is often the biggest moon of the year, the harvest moon or the hunter's moon, the autumn moon. So just when my longing to see the moon over Kyoto one last time grows deepest, the image I behold this autumn night leaves me sleepless for its beauty. So he longed to see it, but it just kept him up all night, the way a full moon can do. So what I wanted to bring up with you, and I know we have till 9, yes, 9 on the nose, I think, is something I've been studying for this past year. And this is an essay by Dogen Zenji, who is the main founder of the San Francisco Zen Center, the School of Japanese Zen, comes from this teacher, Dogen Zenji. And he lived in Japan. He was born in 1200 and died in 1253. He died relatively young. And he wrote something called the Genjo Koan. Are you familiar with the Genjo Koan, some of you? It's something that's quoted very often. There's a paragraph: to study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. That is often, some people know that, but they don't know where it comes from. And it comes from this Genjo Koan. So I've been studying this essay, you could call it an essay, it's or a fascicle, it's called, for the past year. And I wanted to just share some of the teachings from that with you tonight, and then leave a chance for some question and answer. You know, the Genjo Koan is, it's not like a philosophical treatise that is intellectual, although there, it's packed with, you know, the teaching is just dense with teachings, but it also has lots of poetic images, and it's a real call to us to live our life fully and with to realize our life, to realize what our lives really are. And I'm feeling it very deeply right now, this call to live my life fully. Especially right now, there's enormous amount of stress I think people are feeling with, well, all sorts of things. The usual stress that we feel. And then on top of that, we have the financial crisis and great losses in people's lives. Many of us are directly affected by these great losses. Plus there's, you know, how to practice with the election that's coming up and the intenseness of feeling, and how do we have right speech and calmness of mind and beneficial action and skillful action in these times of loss and stress and bitter, difficult times. So there's always things to practice with in that way. And right now I think there's people are feeling this quite a bit. And I imagine many of you or all of you in the room are feeling these stresses. So the Genjo Koan is a real call to how do we respond appropriately to our lives. So it's interesting how just the title itself, which I think is probably all we're going to get to, actually says it all. It's kind of like when you receive instruction in meditation, it's like the instructor tells you everything kind of right from the beginning, and it sounds simple, but how do we realize it? How do we make it alive for ourselves? So this Genjo Koan is, there's many, many commentaries, many, many translations. I have five here in a little sectioned off kind of a workbook, and there's more than that and commentaries from the time of Dogen, they began making commentaries on this. So a traditional practice of working with scriptures or sutras or these kinds of teachings is to start with the title. So the title, Genjo Koan, I'll show you. This is my attempt at the calligraphy for Genjo Koan. So Genjo Ko, and then the An, I'll say a little bit more about the An part. This isn't supposed to be an academic event here. I actually want it to be kind of juicy, because it is for me, actually. So the word Gen, or the character Gen, means to appear, to manifest, to that which wasn't there before arises, to be in the present moment. That which is right before us, actually, is Gen, what is appearing, what is right there. Something potential becomes actualized, becomes right there. So, Gen. And the Jo, when you put it together with the Jo, makes a compound, and the two together means to actualize or to accomplish, to become. The Jo is to become, to accomplish. So, Genjo, the verb, is to actualize or to become manifest. And it's translated as actualize or realize. So it's pointing to not some theorized thing, but what's right here, right now, in our own experience. What's up, what's present for us right now is Genjo, the Genjo. And the koan, the ko part, usually, I'm sure many of you have heard the word koan in used to refer to a Zen story or Zen teaching, yes, koan. And the ko is means public, and public or equal or common. So like a public library is, anybody can go to a public library. Anybody's welcome there. It's for everybody, right? It's equal. Everybody's equal in the public sphere, the public space, the public commons. That's for everybody. So that's this public. And sometimes it's translated as a public case, these stories, something that is out there for people to, it's public to study. The An is the interesting part, this character An, which is written in two different ways. So one of the Ans has the radical for wood, and it's like a desk that this public, like putting something on a desk. So that's where this public case comes from, placing something on a desk, public case like a law that can't be changed. The other, and both of these ons have, I want to show you this, have this, it gets its name from this on, and this on means peace or ease, and what it has is a roof with a woman under it. That's on. So the visual, you know, it's so wonderful about characters. They tell a visual story of a woman sitting under her roof is peace, is ease. Like the Bible where it says, you know, under your vine and fig tree I'll live in peace and study war no more, right? So this image of ease and peace. And the one is this peaceful ease on top of a desk or on wood, and the other is, it has the radical for hand next to this piece. And this hand, this means to massage or to press or to probe or to, investigate using your hand to get, like, probing, you know. And this on, this second on that has the hand, means keeping to one's lot or one's own sphere. Keeping to one's own, or you might say, the individual or the private or the unique, the one of a kind. So you put that together with the ko, which is public, and the an, which is private. Ko, which is equal, common to everybody, universal, a ko, and the an as private, individual, partial, unique. And to go further with this, the ko represents, or I don't know, represents, is expressing the emptiness of our, or interdependentness of our life. Everyone's equal in emptiness. And the an is the uniqueness and the particularity of form. So form and emptiness, ko and an, or relative and absolute, right? Partial and universal. This teaching that, you know, I've heard forever. In fact, when I first started sitting and people were bringing up, you know, relative and absolute and form and emptiness, it was like, don't tell me about form and emptiness. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't want to hear it. I just want to practice sitting. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't want, it has nothing to do with me, you know. And over the years, this speaks to me very deeply, actually. This, so putting this together, this is the Genjo Koan, is the manifestation or actualization or present manifestation of our life is Koan, or public and private, or individual and universal at the exact same time. The reality of our life is like that. It's both and. And if we fall into one or the other, it's not full enough. It's not round enough. It's not, it's one-sided. There's an image, kind of a traditional image of which Suzuki Roshi used to use, which I never understood, which was, don't be a board-carrying fellow. It must be an idiomatic thing. And so the image is a person carrying a big piece of wood, you know, like a lumber, and they're walking around and they keep bumping into things, and they're very one-sided, right? One-sided. Don't be a board-carrying fellow or guy or gal, you know. We have to include both sides of how we exist, how we actually exist, which is completely unique, never to be repeated again, completely individual, each one of us, and at the exact same time, in our interdependence and our, we're completely connected with all beings, past, present, and future, and horizontally through space and time, right? I mean, we've heard this teaching. So the Genjo Koan is saying, the title is translated different ways, but one is actualizing the fundamental point. Actualizing the fundamental point. The fundamental point, it doesn't really, Koan doesn't actually translate as fundamental point. It translates as this public, private, or unique and universal, which is the fundamental point of our life. That's how we exist. And the question then to us, or the call, is how will you actualize that? How are we going to live that out right now? So it has a very dynamic quality to it. So actualizing the fundamental point. I gave a children's lecture a couple weeks ago. We have a Sunday morning the first Sunday of the month, a children's lecture, and I told the story of stone soup. Do you know that story? Some of you know that story. And it's a wonderful story about community. Community meaning, kaumunas means to bring a gift, to offer. That's what the word community means, to offer something. You go and bring and offer. And in this story, they make soup. And it starts out with everybody being kind of hoarding their vegetables in their own and being very afraid. Because why? Because they've had some war and they can't trust people. They've had some pretty harsh times in this village. And this soldier comes and wants some food. He's hungry and nobody will, we don't have any food. We're just a poor village. Sorry. And he kind of intuits that they actually do have food, but that they're frightened and anxious and stressed, right? Like, and that they're afraid of him. So he says, well, I'll make stone soup. And he gets a big cauldron that they and builds a fire and gets three stones and kind of cleans them up and puts them in the big cauldron and fills it with water. And he's stirring and the kids get kind of curious. What are you making? What? I'm making stone soup. It's delicious. Have you ever had stone soup? No, we've never had that. Try it. It's very good. We have to boil this up. Of course, it always tastes a little bit better with salt, you know. But I don't have any salt. Do any of you have salt? I think my mom has salt, yeah. So then this little kid brings salt. And he's stirring the stones. And, you know, stone soup really tastes better with onions. You know, it's really good with onions. Pretty soon the townsfolk come, and they're curious, too. What do you make? Stone soup? And they bring, well, I'll add onions. Carrots are really good in it. I cut some carrots, yeah, under the bed, you know, so somebody brings carrots. Chopped up cabbage, great. How about some kale? Anybody? Yes. Potatoes, delicious. And he's stirring. Stone soup is really, really good, you know. Pretty soon all the townsfolk are contributing, and they make this delicious big cauldron of soup. Well, gee, there's too much here for me. Let's set the table. And they put out the tables, and I've got some bread, and pretty soon they set the table, they're serving up a big stew of this delicious stone soup. So as I was telling the kids this and thinking about Genjo Koan, I was imagining, I thought, this is Genjo Koan. Of course, everything now for me is Genjo Koan. Each of these individual vegetables, and actually after I told this at Green Gulch, we have a little farmer's market. People bought bags of vegetables. I think everybody was saying, I gotta make soup, you know. Anyway, we had a very good market day that day. But each of the vegetables is completely unique, completely on or separate, individual, has its own flavor, its own way to grow, it's, you know, under the ground, over the ground, its own texture and vitamin. It's just completely unique. Each potato, each leaf of kale. And then you put them all together in the soup and they support each other and give and take, and you put the lid on and they all cook together in the dark. You know, this is, so in this chant that we chanted this morning, the harmony of difference and equality, it has right in light, which are the individual, the on, the partial, the form, the individual, the vegetables. That's called the light, the discrimination, the discernment of all the different separate things, self and other, all the 10,000 things. Those individual vegetables in the light. And then you put them in the dark, in the cauldron, you put on the lid. And we say, in the light there is darkness, and in the darkness there is light. In the dark of the soup that we all live in together, we're all in the soup together, right? I mean, if someone were to put a lid on this room, you know, we're all cooking, right, together. But each of us has our own individual way, our own uniqueness, on, at Ko On. So they cook together, and it's all, they all become kind of equal in the soup, right? And you can't tell what's what in the dark of the soup. This is emptiness. This is the emptiness teaching. The form and emptiness are, you can't separate them. They actually, they are, this is the actual, this is our life, is both form and emptiness, both partial and universal. This is actually how we live. So, and then the Genjo Koan, which we, as I knew, we would just stop with the title, but maybe it will encourage you to look it up and read it, is encouraging us to express ourselves fully, not our own tiny, small self, but the uniqueness as well as the universal, to express that fully in each moment. That's the question that the Genjo Koan is saying. How are we going to live our life? Our life that's like this, that's both of these things together. And many, many Zen stories, I think, illustrate this. This not getting caught in either side and acting and expressing ourselves both at once. So, Genjo Koan, actualizing the fundamental point of how we exist right now. Actualizing meaning action, that we actually take action and live out our life from there, whether we know it or not. But this is where our practice helps us to realize this truth. So it's about a little after 8:45, and I've done a lot of talking here, so maybe that's enough for now from what I wanted to present. And do you have anything you'd like to bring up or add or ask? Yes?
I would like to hear
Please. Could you take the microphone, please?
Could you read us a small selection?
From the Genjo Koan?
Yes, from the Genjo Koan.
Yes, I'd be happy to.
Get a little feel for it.
Okay, I'll just read the first paragraph, which they say is the entire framework. The commentators say the first paragraph, the first like four sentences, is the entire framework of all of Buddhism. So in some ways, you could just study that for the next, 50 years or something. So I'll read the first, I think four sentences really. And I'd love to comment on it, but I know we don't have time. As all things are Buddha Dharma, there is delusion and realization, practice and birth and death, and there are Buddhas and sentient beings. As the myriad things are without an abiding self, there is no delusion, no realization, no Buddha, no sentient being, no birth, no death. The Buddha way is basically leaping clear of the many and the one. Thus there are birth and death, delusion and realization, sentient beings and Buddhas. Yet in attachment, blossoms fall, and in aversion, weeds spread. It's the first paragraph. This line, yet in attachment, blossoms fall, and in aversion, weeds spread. He kind of comes back to there's various teachings in those three sentences about emptiness, form and emptiness, and leaping clear of form and emptiness and action. And then it's very human. In attachment, blossoms fall. Oh, that flower, I love that rose, and it's going to die. It dies. Or a loved one, you know. In attachment, or blossoms fall. Beings, we're separated from those we love. And in aversion, weeds spread, you know. No matter what you do, it's like, there they are again. You got to keep at it. But, you know, what is a weed to somebody? A weed in the wrong ecosystem or in a different ecosystem, that weed is a flower, right? The eucalyptus at Green Gulch are like invasives, but in Australia, you know, they're wonderful. So in attachment, blossoms fall, and in aversion, weeds spread. This is our human life together. So did that whet your appetite at all to read it? Yeah. There's many translations. Moon in a Dewdrop, Tanahashi-san, Kaz Tanahashi-san, who does the sumi, the big circles, and his translation, and many others. Yeah. You're welcome.
I just wanted to say I appreciate... Hello? I appreciate that you brought up that it's the autumn equinox, because I was talking to a friend today about how I dread winter because of seasonal affect disorder. So I just really loved what you had to say about it. It was a whole different perspective, so thank you.
You're welcome. This time, you know, for tea ceremony, for example, this is the time of year where you change to the sunken hearth. So I don't know if any of you study tea, but there's an open hearth where you're a little further away from the fire in the summer when it's hot. But in the winter, the hearth is sunken low, and people gather close around the fire for tea ceremony. So gathering, and people gather in homes and, you know, for most of human life, there was real darkness, you know, when the sun left and the dark came and the cold came. This was, and you know, will it come back? You know, so these celebrations, the winter solstice, when it's on its way back, speaks to us very deeply, you know, an old, old cellular way. So to celebrate it, and what might we do to acknowledge it and honor it that time? And take good care of ourselves. It's also the time of year, you know, the Greek myth, when Persephone, pre-Hellenic myth, she on her own went down to the underworld. But after Roman times, she was taken by Hades, right? But there's a earlier version where she wanted to go down to the underworld to help beings. But Demeter, her mother, you know, mourns. And all, you know, the goddess of growing things at Ceres, cereal, goddess of cereal, and all the growing things, Demeter, Ceres, nothing could grow, right, out of this loss, the maternal longing for her daughter and this violation of that bond. So, so things go dormant, you know, nothing can grow. So this is... there's so much there in this time of year for us to reflect on, really. Yeah. Loss, whether it be mother, daughter, any kind of loss, people feel it in the autumn, in often very deeply.
But here, the dormant time is the summer, and when the rains come, things start to grow.
Some things do, yes. The grasses certainly come back.
There's a kind of reversal in California and in the hot, dry climate.
Yeah. The farm in the summer, though, with all that light, it is like you can't hold it back. It's you can't keep up with it.
Because you're providing water.
We're providing water, yeah. Yeah.
So in nature, there's no water, and so not much is growing right now. It's a complicated balance.
Yes.
Right? The natural world here is very different from the world we produce with our water.
Yes, yes. Thank you. Yeah. So in Minnesota, when I flew over Minnesota, it was like this lush green. I used to think, I come from Minnesota. For years, being in California, I thought there was something the matter, you know, in the summer. And then I realized, oh, that's California summer, you know, the oak trees and the dry. Yeah. Yes.
In Buddhism, we talked about not being attached to things.
Yes.
To reach freedom. And in the same time, so in the first part of your sentence, well, of your sentence is to say that everything, you know, the blossom falls and then the weeds come back. It's almost like we have to detach ourselves to some extent to be free, but at the same time, the weeds want to attach themselves to us and we want kind of to run away from it. So it's almost like you have to let everything kind of sit and not you to attach yourself with something else and these things to attach themselves to you, isn't it?
I think this word attach is tricky, you know, because there's necessary, healthy attachment, right? Children to parents and, you know, relational, healthy relational attachments, which is a little bit different from clinging and grasping to that which is ungraspable. So it's, I think in English, the word attachment, we have to clarify what we mean. When you say the weeds attach to us, you know, I guess another kind of, you know, this pushing and pulling that we do, grabbing after things, pushing them away, grasping, you know. So with the weeds, in our aversion, which might even be another kind of attachment, right? I don't like something has a kind of clingy feeling to it too. I don't like this and I don't like that. Can we let go of that? But still, if you're going to have a garden, talking about gardens, we weed. If you're going to grow vegetables or grow flowers, you can do companion planting where the weeds actually work with what you're growing, or so-called weeds. But so how do you separate out what's a weed and what isn't in your own life? What's worthy and what's not worthy? You know, we make these discriminations. I can see the clock from here. It's what, about 1 minute to nine. So this accepting that when we lose and let go of things, the sadness that's there is out of our relationship with things. And the aversion is a relationship too. It's the other side. And not to fool ourselves that this, our human life is like that. It is exactly like that. This likes and dislikes and preferences. Yeah. Well, thank you all for your attention. I had one more Dogen poem, one of these short poems about autumn. Dewdrops on a blade of grass, having so little time before the sun rises. Let not the autumn wind blow too quickly on the field. I'll read it again. dewdrops on a blade of grass having so little time before the sun rises, let not the autumn wind blow so quickly on the field. Thank you very, very much.